and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar. My name's Alan Wares, and we are counting down the days until the fixtures come out. Seven from the first day of this broadcast, if you must know, in association with Flowers Unlimited. AD's taken a short sabbatical, worryingly letting me loose on this presenting malarkey. Well, the season has come to a halt just at a time when the Albion look to have finally hit some decent form. Let's hope that's a portent for August and beyond. For now, though, it means it's summer, and in football terms, it's the transfer silly season. Not so much the transfers themselves, but more the cretinous Fabricazio Romano-esque speculation from every citizen journalist trying to be noticed. That said, many, if not most Albion fans, are delighted that Tarik Lamptey will be gracing the Amex pitch for at least one more season, while the word on the street, while we're recording, is that the club is closing in on Hellas Verona defender Diego Coppola. Talking of directors, Stephen Rees-Lewis is A, our guest, and B, he's an author, writer, director, solicitor, and relative newbie to the Albion. And we've also got Matt Goulson, even more of a newbie, with some explaining to do. Gentlemen, welcome to the Albion Roar. Thanks for coming on. Who are we going to start with? Matt. Now then, I'm picking on you already. Your Albion supporting career, supporting history. Go.
I love that you say I'm a newbie. Honestly, I grew up in Sussex. Brighton have been my local team my entire life. I just didn't know how much they meant to me until this year. That's the truth. So I was listening to the Hereford match on the radio in my bedroom, pacing up and down when I was a teenager. Absolutely delighted that they managed to stay in the Football League. And I'll get it out of the way now because I know you're going to prompt if I don't mention it. At that time, I was a Spurs fan. And I continued to be a Spurs fan, foolishly, for a very, very long time. But I always, through my 20s and 30s, stayed really close to what the Albion were doing. Through the Withdean days, just constantly amazed at the quality of managers that they were able to bring in. You know, Premier League managers like Mark McGee managing on an athletics ground. It was just absolutely remarkable. Players like Leon Knight, Bobby Zamora. I was always kind of keeping an eye on what they were doing. This year got a season ticket to the Albion and haven't looked back. It's been the best sporting experience of my life. It is by far the best club in the country to be supporting, as far as I'm concerned.
You're not going to get any argument out of me, but although I do like the fact that there is a kind of a Spurs-esque notion of the fact that when you finally decide to get a season ticket with somewhere else, Spurs bother their backsides to win a trophy.
It was the weirdest feeling, actually, watching that Europa League final, because I thought my experience earlier in the season, if I go back to the home game against Spurs, Stephen will attest to this. I was sat there in the stand saying to Steve, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this. Because Brighton are my new team, Spurs are my old team, and Spurs have been in my family for ages. My granddad grew up supporting Spurs. But when those first two goals went in, I was gutted and I was just sat there like, oh my God, I don't believe it. I can't believe this. I'm really not enjoying this. And as soon as Albion scored their first, I just went absolutely ballistic. And I was like, oh, right. I'm a Brighton fan now.
that was the giveaway. When you kept saying we are doing this and we're doing that. That was when you gave yourself away.
Yeah, totally. And sat watching the Europa League final. It was the weirdest experience because 12 months ago, I probably would have cared and been interested in the fact that Spurs were winning a trophy. And honestly, all that was going through my mind was, I just need Brighton to finish eighth and I really want Chelsea to beat Forest to beat Chelsea,
yeah,
so that we can end up qualifying for the Conference League. Spurs just don't factor at all anymore. I listen to the podcasts that I used to listen to for a laugh and... Yeah, it's all about the Albion for me now.
I mean, this is it. I mean, the Spurs have in the league have had their worst season since 1977. And what happened in 77 is one of the first seasons I ever remember, is they got relegated alongside Stoke and Sunderland. Are you familiar? I mean, do you go that far back that every Albion fan of a given vintage will tell you about the Southampton Spurs stitch-up?
Southampton Spurs stitch up. No, that's before my time, I
Okay,
think.
well, I'm also addressing probably those who are under 50 as well, but it's the 1977-78 season. The Albion have just had their best ever season, finishing fourth in the old second division, what is now the Championship. Or rather, we're in fourth place going into the last game of the season. This is in the days when it was just three up, no playoffs or any of that sort of silly soddedness. So Bolton were already champions, and Brighton needed to win their last game, and Southampton or Spurs, if either of them didn't win, or sorry, if either of them lost, then the Albion would have leapfrogged them. As it transpires, Southampton and Spurs played each other on the last day of the season. The game finished 0-0. It was apparently the most tedious game going. Yeah, the fact it's 47 years ago, I don't care. If there's anyone in the universe who's going to actually have the long memory, the anti-goldfish memory, it's a football fan. And
100%.
so, there is a certain level of sort of kind of, I suppose, anti-Spurs sentiment. Although the irony is that there are four managers in the Albion's history who were ex-Spurs players. So I suppose there are links there. But so have you kind of do you feel you've now completely disentangled yourself from Spurs?
I
Have you
think
been able to
it's
get
all
rid of 25, 30 years of support in one go?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'd say emotionally yes, but intellectually not, if that makes sense. I'm still.
I don't think you could consider Spurs an intellectual in the same sentence, could you?
Oh no, it's just comedy at the
All
moment.
right.
Pure comedy value. So I still enjoy following the coverage and seeing what's going on at the club, mostly because in a lot of ways it is a complete basket case. But the experience of supporting Brighton compared to supporting Spurs is just it's completely incomparable. Yes, Spurs have an incredible stadium that I've been to a couple of times and seen matches there, and it's a good experience. But I think I've said this to you before, Al. It feels like a corporate or commercial experience. It feels like you are consuming the product, whereas what I get at the Albion is a sense of all of that history that that I talked about of the Hereford days,
Oh,
the
yes,
With Dean days, all of that, that vibe, that sense of community and that recognition of how far the club has come. It's really cheesy to say, but you can feel it when you arrive at the ground on a match day. You get that vibe, and it's unlike anything I've experienced anywhere else at any football match. The fact that we can mingle with away fans after the game and be able to just talk to them and have a laugh and get to know them in a just really kind of stress-free, conflict-free atmosphere is absolutely remarkable, and that's testament to all of the work that the club have done to make it a really welcoming environment. So, yeah, on an emotional level, completely, I'm all in on Brighton, and as I say, I think I always have been. I just didn't realise how much until I got the experience to go and see them in person on a regular
And now
basis.
you've just jettisoned the X, and she can go hang. Steve, is this kind of what Matt's talking about there? And obviously a football fan, sort of through and through, albeit sort of, I suppose, supporting Spurs and then sort of realizing the Albion were going to come calling. But in terms of you going to football, that's a relatively new experience for you. So when you go to the Amex, do you feel this sort of relative lack of corporate. Do you feel sort of like you're being bludgeoned with corporate stuff when you go and watch the Albion?
Absolutely not. It's one of the best sporting experiences. This is the first season ticket I've had for anything. And so I was really umming and ahhing, will I get to many of the games and everything else? But when I go, that sense of unity, getting on the train or getting on the bus or whatever, getting to the stadium and it's building and you're chatting to the other fans and everything else, it's just an amazing experience. It really is. I'm getting goosebumps just talking about
And
it. So,
I've got to be honest with you. There is someone high up at American Express who I've got to know, and we will get her on the show one day. I think she's one of the VPs. Her name's Beverly, and you'll always see her around sort of with the corporate stuff. But she only really got into football about, sort of, I suppose, 10, 15 years ago, and when she started going, absolutely loved it. And then because of her position, was able to, be very much part of the I suppose the inner circle. And I don't think I'm giving away too many secrets here, but the point is that I suppose, is there something to be said of the difference between someone who goes the first time when they're eight and the someone who goes for the first time when they're 48?
Ooh. Do you know what? I don't think it's that different, actually.
Well, when you say about you're getting goosebumps, you know, so when you're going to the Albion, I mean, it's almost like, I wouldn't say a midlife crisis, but there's something that, do you feel you've, is it something you feel you've missed out on and you need to catch up on?
Yeah, I do. I think for my story, it's a little bit different to Matt's in that
Tell
it's
it.
the rise of football as opposed to other sports. So I grew up in a family that was a very sporty family, watching and playing, and it was all about Welsh rugby. And rugby was my passion. That was the thing. So my dad and my granddad were big Luton fans as well, behind rugby. But so I'd get taken to, you know, the occasional Luton game and stuff like that. And then in the sort of 70s, I went to the same school as Dan, up in
We're talking about our good friend Dan Tester here. He of
absolutely.
Brighton and Hove Albion on this day and other tomes.
That's it. And so you either supported Spurs or Arsenal. You had to make a choice. So I'd remembered Charlie George scoring his amazing goal. And then my parents were
Sorry, can I
actually.
give another context? In the 1971 FA Cup final, yes?
That's the one. That's
Okay. It's
probably
because
one of
I
my
know what
first
you're on
memories.
about, isn't it?
No, I had a cold. I was under a duvet and I saw it. And he lies back on the pitch, doesn't he? It's an
That's him.
iconic
Yep.
moment. Anyway, so it was that. And then my parents were friends with the guy that put the ball into him, John Radford. So it
Okay.
made sense to support Arsenal. And so in those late 70s eras, I used to listen to Arsenal had a really good record in the FA Cup. I used to listen to it in my room, in the dark, all the replay games and stuff like that. But rugby was top, then it would be athletics and Formula One, and then football was a long way below that.
Well, it would be if
First.
you're watching Luton.
Yeah, exactly. So then, first exposure to the Albion was 83 Cup final.
Okay.
So obviously fascinating, you know, underdog and Jimmy Melia, was it? It was
That's him.
that was extraordinary. And so the replay and Smith will score and all of that sort of stuff. So then I moved down to Brighton in 92. And at that point, then it was all started to get horribly wrong at Goldstown, didn't it? That's the era, yeah.
The 90s were not a good time for the Albion.
90s. So I was sort of busy with my life. Sport didn't figure quite as highly. Still very much into rugby. Then all the move to Wisden. Then I started going. So I'd probably go to about three games a season or thereabouts. And if I'm perfectly honest, I thought the standard was terrible. I used to see the ball bouncing around. I thought, this is terrible, you know? It was not Division One football that I was watching at that time.
Yes, but then if you're sport with that, you know, sometimes you just sort of well, to be fair, it was a, you know, for all the facts, it was the team that won the fourth division did actually get to play in the second division and survive just about. So there was something about it. But yeah, I mean we'll get on to sort of where we're at these days in a minute. But yeah, going to Withdean, I think, you know, I don't know how you felt about it, but we knew full well that we weren't exactly watching Brazil playing. But we did have the local pride and the excitement of the fact that, you know, as mentioned before, Bobby Zamora scoring all the time, Leon Knight getting us up, you know, four promotions in 12 years and so on and so forth. That as you know, with Dean, horrible, but we had a good time there. Did you sort of catch that at all?
It was really mixed feelings about it. It always seemed freezing there. I
Yeah.
liked it because I could walk to it. Because I was just around the corner from you. And also the Bobby Zamora energy was starting and the promotions. And what was the
Boy
name?
Slim as well was exploding all over the place, wasn't I?
Yeah, absolutely. And then was it the Leader, was the local free newspaper? And there was a guy who used to write on the back page, and he was a really good writer. He used to make them very entertaining.
The only one I can think of is Mike Ward. Was that him?
Can't remember off the top of my head, but he wrote really good articles. So I was then starting to follow it through that and going to the occasional game. The epiphany, without a doubt, was the Hereford game for me, because suddenly I realised what the stakes are and I really cared a lot. So I listened to it on the radio,
I was about to say,
and
were
I
you
would,
pacing in the same way that Matt was?
yeah, absolutely. And I was surprised. It's like bloody hell, it's got under my skin now at that point. So yeah, my God, what a relief when we, didn't get relegated. That was and suddenly something had turned. I was definitely fully a remote Brighton fan. Arsenal, I'd look at the results, but I wouldn't. That was the time when I decided this is the club for me.
Okay, so I mean, a question to well, either or both of you. I mean, Matt's obviously talked about the fact that well, the pair of you've got your season ticket for the first time this year. You've finally taken the plunge, and it is quite a whilst you've got the emotional investment in there, the financial investment is always quite a tricky one to follow up on. You've both done it. So with that in mind, how do you feel as an investment into yourselves that season ticket has been this year?
For me, it's
You
the
first,
best.
yeah.
Yeah, it's the best money that I spent. It's the best 800, 900 quid or whatever it is that I have spent, certainly on sport. It's a no-brainer. It's absolutely bloody brilliant. I'm thrilled. And what you get for that money, in terms of the excitement and the experience and the buy-in and seeing Matt and seeing you and everything else, it's off the charts. It's amazing.
Matt, does that ring a bell for you?
Absolutely. It's the first thing that came to my mind. It's absolutely money well spent. It's a strange thing to be able to get off the train at Falmer and literally kind of leave everything else behind
Your whole
for
life, you mean? Your whole
three,
baggage.
yeah, absolutely, for 3 or 4 hours essentially, because it's not just, the match itself, it's the pre-match time, speaking to people afterwards. It's bizarre because obviously football is a sport. It is about winning and losing. And when you win, it's a particularly great day. But Stephen and I have both commented that even when it's a crappy performance, sorry, even when it's a poor performance, it's still an enjoyable experience that on the whole, the 90 minutes might not be quite as fun, but the experience of being at the Albion and that match day atmosphere is brilliant. And I can't see myself ever not being a season ticket holder now.
So how loopy, I know you've mentioned it, Matt, so let's go to you, Steve. How loopy did the pair of you actually, because you do sit together, I think, in the East Stand. How did you go? I think probably the first kind of big result against one of the big sides was the game you mentioned earlier, the turnaround against Spurs. Beer was pretty good, wasn't it, afterwards?
The beer was
Beer
great.
was
My throat the next day was not so good because I couldn't talk. I'd been screaming so much.
is almost like sort of screaming at your ex, though, isn't it?
Honestly, I had it at the Man United game. There's so many times this season, particularly where we seem to have picked up really great results really late in the day,
Of course,
and that
Man
just
U was
makes
at
the
the beginning.
celebration so much bigger.
Yeah, of course, Man U was at the beginning of the season. I forgot
Yeah.
about that one. Yes, yeah, and that was
And the
a,
comeback against City,
yeah,
that was massive.
that was good. Well, any win against the big six, even though Spurs and Manchester United, had probably two of their worst seasons ever since the 70s. And incidentally, as a stat, which I know that I'm not going to challenge you on, I'm just going to tell you, just leaves Liverpool and Arsenal as the only two clubs we've never finished above. Yeah, it's and yet there are people out there who would say that this season has not been as good as it could or should have been. I mean, especially with the whole notion of not being able to beat any of the bottom three at home, which for me is a statistical anomaly. And I've worked it out. Out of the bottom six, we got 26 points from the bottom six and didn't lose to any of them, as opposed to getting 17 points from the top six and losing two or three times. And I say I'm not sure if you've what it is you've got to judge it against, but you're saying it's the best money you've spent. But do you feel there could have been more, or were you just going along for the ride?
I think that having watched them play, particularly, it was a weird season, just the spikes in form. were really pronounced. A really good run and then a poor run, and then a good run and then a bit of a poor run, and picked it up at the end.
And then
So you
7-0.
can't, yeah, exactly. You can't help but think that points were left on the table. But on balance, probably, actually, we pretty much turned out where we deserved to be. The win against Fulham, for example, they were better than us, but we managed to pick up 3 points. The Wolves result, had it not been for a loose pass when we had a 4-on-1 breakaway or whatever it was, that probably would have been 3 points. So,
If.
yes, you can certainly hope for more, but the sense that you get at the Albion is that it's always building and always will continue to build. The fact that they've been able to replace so many quality players who've left with other quality players who are probably likely to leave. I'm fully expecting we're going to lose some key players in the summer, but we've got really great ones coming back in. So that sense of continuity, that sense of progression, has been brilliant. Yes, it would have been phenomenal to finish in a European spot, and we almost did. I mean, who knows?
We
We
might
might, or we
yet.
might yet. Here's hoping. But you can't help. I certainly feel that there are some. You could see some patterns of play that didn't work against really deep blocks last year. And that's the bit that we need to change. If we can work that out, and you could see in certain matches when substitutions were made and you suddenly got a right-footed winger on the right wing and a left-footed winger on the left wing, we could go in behind. We started to make a difference. So there are tactical tweaks that need to be made. But it's there for the taking next year to see what we can do. But, again, look at where we've come from. You can't complain with an eighth place finish in the Premier League.
Second best ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that, Steve, I don't know, again, because it's your first season, I'm not sure if you've been able to have anything to judge it by, but do you think that there is a bit of an air of entitlement amongst the fans, or is it something that you just sort of, let pass by and think, well, do you know what? I'm just having a good time.
It's funny you should say that because Matt and I talked about this. I think it's very easy to forget the journey that we've had, and now people think it's our right to consistently be top six, and we're going to have to work bloody hard. We don't have necessarily the resources or the stadium. So enjoy all the wins, and obviously, absolutely, I couldn't be more excited if we get back in Europe, but every single game I relish, and when we do win, yeah, so I don't know entitlements. We've just forgotten the journey that we've been on, and you've got to remember that. But that shouldn't stop us being super ambitious about what we want to achieve in the coming years. As Matt said, it's that building, boom, the building blocks. We're putting the building blocks in, and it's working. You can see it working.
It's
Okay. So
interesting hearing how different generations of fans engage with it, I think, because as I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say it, Al, but apparently that, well, I know there are because I have listened to a couple of them, other Albion podcasts
how
out
dare
there
you? How
with
dare you? You've
with
been listening to the Albion Roar. Good night.
with
Sorry,
slightly
sorry, carry on. Go
That's fine.
on.
With slightly younger demographic that they're engaging with,
Oh,
younger
we know
hosts.
that our demographic is people with grey beards. Don't worry.
Good. I'm in the right club. But the feat that listening to some of those commenting on the 7-0 match versus the commentary on the Raw was really interesting.
Give us a
I'm
for
pretty sure I
instance.
remember you. I think it was you rather than AD, who was very much like, look, it's a blip. Let's not get carried away. We'll see what happens next. And obviously, we then went on a massive, great run, which got us back into contention for European place. But
Oddly enough, sorry, Matt, I remember this. Oddly enough, it was the show where we had some people from Stateside Seagulls on. I think we wanted to avoid it completely and just talk about American fans. But we couldn't not talk about it, and I did get asked by by the president, Laura Ellen, of Stateside Seagulls, whether something like 7-0 is enough for Tony Bloom to release Hertzler from his contract. And he, well, I knew that. I think we all knew that that's not the kind of chairman that Tony Bloom is. And I think that it's that experience of, all right, 7-0, third worst defeat ever, but these things happen. If it was happening week in, week out, then we've got a problem. But yeah, if there's, And I knew that there was going to be, I did actually spend a bit, quite a bit of time not listening to other things because I knew there were going to be a lot of people upset and saying, this is it, the end of our season. Everyone's got to go, close it down,
Absolutely.
smash it up. Let's go back to with, you know, it's, and that's where you've got the likes of Tony Bloom who just won't panic. It was a bad day. It was a bad day. And I've said it before, and I say it again on this show. Hertzler made an absolute dropsy. His tactics were 100% wrong, and he's acknowledged that. And anytime he's made a mistake, and he's made several, but the trick is to learn from it. And he has not made the same mistake twice. He's made a
Absolutely.
lot of different mistakes. But yeah, as you say, Steve, I mean, you lose 7-0, and then you go on and win the next six in a row. That takes some balls, doesn't it?
That was incredible. The run that we went off. I had no idea how they were going to recover from that, what the mindset was going to be. Because although I don't know very much about football tactics, I've spent my life studying sports and sports psychology and read books on it for fun. So that was fascinating. How were we going to bounce back from that? Was it going to be a big bounce or a little bounce, or were the heads going to go down?
Well, what do you think in, with that in mind, with that sports psychologist cap on, what do you believe that you saw? What from outside looking in, what did you read from that?
I think it was wipe the slate clean. Doesn't matter. Bad day at the office. We're an excellent side, and there's everything to play for. Right, we go again.
With that in mind, Stephen, can you see again, from the outside, how it is you believe that Fabian Hertzler works?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think that he's got youth on his side, hasn't he? So he's a very modern manager. I think he's super ambitious. He's with a club that's super ambitious. And therefore, what I'm seeing is someone that really, I think, is good at man motivation. And so you said he's not made the same mistake twice. Occasionally, the inconsistency, it looks like they've come out and they're not fired up for the game. And that's what's really got to happen for this coming season. We've got to be up for it. We're always up for the big games, and occasionally for the teams in the bottom half of the Premier, not so much. But if we can get that total focus week in, week out, I think that the sky's the limit. I really do.
With that in mind, then, Matt, I mean, bearing in mind that two of our last four games were against teams who finished in the bottom eight, Wolves and Spurs, and it kind of showed that we can do it against the teams who, you know, even though they've got a decent track record and Spurs are supposed to be a lot better than they are, that when it comes to those teams, we can still do it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen a decent away record this year. I think that I'd like to see us take a few more risks against those teams. I think we played it too safe against a lot of those opposition last year. There was many times when I'd see five attackers really bunching up against the opposition defence, but then there wasn't really much movement to try and actually get in behind, and there wasn't an opportunity to play the ball through or over the top. It's subtle tweaks, but you look at the quality of players who we've seen this year, the depth as well, with the injury crisis as well. That's something that I think has been overlooked. Spurs talked about it all season long. Well, Brighton actually had a worse injury record than Spurs did, and they didn't blame any results on it, as far as I can recall.
Well, Hertzler refused to do so. I mean, do you believe that actually, though, in the last half dozen games, that what you're saying about it was a bit slow, couldn't work our way through, you know, all a bit stultified, needed this, needed that. But in the last half dozen games or so, that you could feel that they had finally sussed what it is they're supposed to be doing. I don't know if either of you really felt that.
I totally agree. I've been saying all season I didn't feel like I'd seen a proper 90-minute performance. It felt like there were good bits, but not that consistency. And I personally think we got it against Liverpool in that last home game. So if we can continue playing at that level and doing what we did to break down those low blocks, we have to. Yes, Tottenham finished in the lower half of the table quite well. One place above relegation, but let's be serious. They were on the beach in that final game because they just won a major competition. It was the Wolves match I was more impressed by. And
Sure.
yeah, looking forward to seeing them go again next year.
Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB Plus, on Smart Speaker, on just about anything bar a carrier pigeon. My name's Alan Wares, and this show is brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited. Our very great thanks to Dave Costa, owner of Flowers Unlimited, which is located at 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. So for all your floral needs, do not go ram raiding your neighbor's garden. Do not go nicking everything at the park. Go to Flowers Unlimited. And if you tell them that you're an Albion season ticket holder, you will automatically get one. Not automatically, if you ask nicely, I guess you can't just demand it. That is rude. You'll get a 20% discount. So for all your gift and presents needs, floral, champagne, chocolates, etc., etc., do head to Flowers Unlimited. 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, and tell them we sent you. Stephen, Matt, I don't know who to approach on this. Tell us about Heroes Have Heroes.
If I go first and then Matt can join in.
Go on
So, yeah,
then.
basically, how that came about was
Well, first and foremost, what is it?
oh, what is it? Yeah, absolutely. So, Heroes of Heroes is interviews with famous people who have had fascinating lives, where they're talking about the highs and lows of their life. And then they're talking about the people that have inspired them, their own personal heroes. And we film it like a movie. So, it looks very beautiful.
Well, that's the sell, that's the pitch, and you managed to get all these people in just on the back of that.
Yeah, we've got a very good agent. He's very persuasive. I think they got it. The fact that they weren't there to sell stuff. It's not about selling a book or a movie or stuff like that. It's really a sort of legacy thing. So they can talk about pretty much what they want, hardly any interruptions. And it's their chance to say thank you to the people that have sort of supported them in their lives.
So Matt, what in your opinion is the USP on this?
The USP for me is in the title. It's these people saying, telling us who inspired them on their journey. And if you watch the footage, you hear these incredible stories. The episode that still jumps out to me is DJ Spoonie talking about, his upbringing, the way that kind of music saved him from a very, very different life, and all the people along that journey who believed in him, pushed him, inspired him. It's the kind of stuff that you just don't tend to hear. You tend to hear about in interviews what people did, not what motivated them to do it. And that, for me, I've said to Stephen since the first time he ever mentioned this idea to me, that's the hook. That's the really, really powerful hook, because anyone can get it. And it doesn't matter what background someone is from, whether they're a musician, an actor, a sports person, that resonates with people.
So, whose
And
idea was it originally?
yeah, it was mine, and it was from about 4 or 5 years ago. I was having a really bad time, and I was taking the dog for a walk and started listening to podcasts for the first time. And
Sorry about that.
Desert Island Discs was, up there with you. And so basically, about say a year and a half ago, I thought, wouldn't it be great if you could actually see the guests? And wouldn't it be great if it was beautifully filmed and it was an emotional story, not talking about the championships and the wins. It's about how they felt about the major beats in their life and the people that have impacted them.
So, can you give us a roll call? Because you've done eight so far, is it?
Yep, we've done eight. So we've had five sports people and three from entertainment.
And they
So
are.
we got Paul Merson, Rachel Yankee, Phil Tufnell, Baroness Tanny Gray Thompson, Maggie Alfonsi, Patsy Palmer, Russell Kane, DJ Spooney.
And when you're sort of coming up with this and. I guess you've chosen them because you knew there was a backstory rather than they happen to be sort of well known or they happen to not even necessarily leaders in their sport, that their background was one where they had a story to tell.
They had a great story to tell. I remember your advice to me. We went out after one of the games, and you said to me,
It must
make
have been, it was a
sure.
drunken advice then in that case.
It was good advice. Make sure that your guests are very personable and that they have a great story to tell. And I took that to heart. So that's how we selected our amazing guests.
I do know, I'll tell you what, it was such good advice. I don't remember giving it to you, but the only thing I did suggest, I think, and you kind of took it on board, but I think you had it anyway, was what would you say to those who believed the most at the beginning of their career? And one of these aspects you've got is to get them to write a kind of a letter to their first ever mentor. Which incidentally, having watched all these, usually come with floods of tears as well, don't they?
They do, you know, they're looking down the barrel of the camera, they read the letter, and it's always right at the end, a special message. And it sets off the guests, it sets off the crew. I was banned from being on set because I was crying too much. So it works incredibly. That's the big emotional clout. But it's not a tear fest. You know, everything in human life is there. So they're educational and they're funny and they're heartwarming and some of them are romantic and all sorts of things. Everything is there, but there is a fair amount of tears.
So, Matt, when you were getting the guests together, did you ever have a fear that you know there might be one who's just going to give that kind of nomic one-word reply, Robert Mitchum like, oh, yep, no? Or did you sort of kind of look into the background and say, yeah, this person not only has a story to tell but will tell it well? I mean, how did you sort of land on these eight?
So I can let Stephen answer the question about the eight because he's much, much more closely involved as the creator and exec producer than I am. I just helped out with some of the marketing, but it just so happens that my wife Kate was the researcher. So she read an awful lot of these guests' biographies and interviews and was really trying to dig behind, again, behind the what you've seen in the press, and what you tend to see from these people when they're engaging with media generally, to actually prompt and probe again to what was it that inspired you. So essentially, Kate would be crafting a load of questions to try to get those more emotional responses and get more of an idea about what's behind, as Stephen says, the championships, the medals, and all those achievements.
Given the nature of the questions and the way that they opened up, did it take much to get them to open up, or were they prepared to do so in the first place?
They were prepared to do so in the first place. One or two of the guests sort of turned up at, yeah, it's a gig, I'm here, you know, sounds vaguely interesting. And then we have a fair amount of time before with them. And then by the time they walk on set, they realize what it's all about and our motives are really, really good. And therefore, from the go-get with all of the guests, they were very, very open and authentic, which was thrilling because it could be a disaster otherwise.
Well, yes. In which case, we wouldn't be talking about this, and you've actually
Exactly.
escaped this torture of being on the Albion Raw. But like I say, in that case, let me, if Matt's going to pass that question over, how did you land on those eight?
They had to be available for the shoot. That was
Well,
very
yes.
important, and the logistics. But over and above that, it was Matt would come to me. This is other Matt, our agent, and say, right, what about these three or four people? And we wanted width. We could have gone with a theme series and had all footballers, all rugby players, all tennis players. We wanted width to demonstrate that the format works beautifully. And therefore, I was given a selection of people. I'd then go away, I'd read up on them, and I'd say, this person's got a fascinating backstory. And we're always looking for people who've had the biggest journey, I think. People that have had a really tough start in life and end up doing amazing things, because I think that's a fascinating thing and it's an inspiring thing.
So with that in mind, obviously, I mean, you know, let's think of the first two that spring to mind here, and they are sports people, Phil Tufnell and Paul Merson, who on a certain level were their sports bad boys, and there was probably a reason why they were those bad boys. And yeah, I know that they're both retired and therefore they can look back on it, but you know, did it take much to, I mean, did it take arm twisting to get them to say what they say? I mean, I've seen the interviews, but I mean, how many of them were take two, take three, take four, or was it just almost like, right, let's get the cameras rolling and see what happens.
Yeah, we rolled the cameras for 2 hours for a sort of 32 to 38 minute show. And so, with Phil, very much he was what you see on the TV for a fair bit of it. And then it started to morph into a completely different and fabulous side of him.
Well, in that
We
case, can I
talked.
cut across you there in that case? I
Yeah,
mean,
sure.
specifically, what caused that? I mean, was there a moment? Was it him? Was it your interviewer? What was it?
All of the above. We try and put the atmosphere on set, the people that we've selected for the crew, the way the questions are put, every single thing is designed to try and put them at ease. And so I think also, as people start to talk about their mum and dad and the sacrifices that they've made or loved ones that they've lost, inevitably that gets you into a very emotional space. Some people were emotional within minutes, and some people further down the line. But I think when you watch it, every single moment is authentic. There's no fake moments at all that I've seen.
Of the eight, do you have a favourite?
That'd be like asking favorite child. No, they're all so different. That was the thing. Before it, I was wondering whether they were going to have their own identities. And absolutely, that's what I love about it. So all of my friends have said to me, that's my favorite, or that's my favorite, or that's my favorite. There's not one of them where it's being universal. Oh, that's brilliant. And I wasn't so keen on that. So it just depends on what appeals to you and what you
Who
love.
wrote the questions, by the way? Was it you?
No, it was Kate, and she did an amazing job. Matt's wife.
Nothing personal, Matt. We should have had Kate on instead, shouldn't
Totally. Yeah.
we?
I'll have to teach her about Albion for next time.
But so what Stephen's just said there, I know you just said about DJ Spoonie, and my wife saw that, and I think she still wants to harangue you, Steve, about going to taking him over to the school that she teaches at. So we're not going to let that one go. But do you have a kind of a favourite either question or general answer, or are we back to Spoonie again?
That's a
For
really good question.
me, Well, sorry, I was this
oh,
is for
that's
Matt.
Matt.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's a really good question. There isn't a particular question that comes to mind. I think you've already kind of mentioned the bit in my mind, Al, which is that golden envelope bit at the end. Because we've heard about the stories, we've heard about the heroes, we've heard what's motivated people, and then all of a sudden they're actually speaking directly down the camera to one of their heroes, and often they're not with us anymore. So they're words that might have gone unsaid previously. It's really, really powerful stuff. Yeah, and I recommend anyone checking it out.
So obviously they're available on YouTube. Is that's your prime thing for that? Have you got anyone looking to pick this up for television, do you know?
Yeah, we're having conversations in the next couple of weeks. So really, we want to have it, both with a streamer or broadcaster and on socials as well. That's the plan.
Sure. So, and how many streams, how many downloads are we out for? Oh, we've got through all eight.
Yeah,
All eight
all eight.
are out there now. Yeah.
Yep. So if people want to consume it in little clips, they can. They can go on YouTube or Insta or on Facebook or whatever. In total, after 8 weeks, we've had 3.3 million views.
That was mostly me, I think, just sort of, trying to get your numbers up.
Thank you.
No, not at all. But so with that in mind, I mean, I'll look at the future of this in a minute. But is there anything now that you've done this, you think, A, I want to do this, or B, you'd have done slightly differently, or are you totally happy with what you've done?
I'm very proud of what we've achieved. I think that anyone watching it will get masses from it, but there's just so much that we can do next time to improve the process and everything else. We want to tweak it and we want it to evolve. There's no licensed clips because we didn't have the finances to do that. So I think a few licensed clips of people doing their stuff would be great. And there's various other things. But I think the basic idea that it's like you sitting down with some of your favorite people in the pub, having a drink and them just talking to you about their life and the people that have mattered to them in their life, I think that's always going to be at the heart of Heroes of Heroes.
So, Matt, where does it go from here? You've done eight. Have you got another eight lined up?
Ask the boss.
Well, your good lady wife has to do the research. So, what's she been? Has she been asked to do anything yet?
Not yet, but I know Stephen's on the case.
So, have you? How long's your shortlist, Steve, for this?
So we want to shoot the next series two in early September.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're discussing at the moment is whether we do a mixed series like we did for series one, or whether we do a theme series. And if it's themed, it's likely to be football or music. And once we've made that decision, we'll go out and attract the talent, and then we'll get the partners on board, and then hopefully shoot it in sort of early to mid-September.
Now, to rewind to that point just a little bit, is I remember taking a friend of mine who actually is, I don't see her anymore, but I do actually see her quite a lot in TV advertisements these days, funnily enough. And she wasn't really into football, but I did take her to the Amex, her and her fella to the Amex, all probably 12, 15 years ago. Wouldn't have been 15 years ago, 12 years ago. And well, while she wasn't into the football, she appreciated the whole theatre aspect of it and the symbiotic relationship between footballers and the crowd. And as someone in her profession, could understand that whole thing. So it's then that's when I get in. Now you had Russell Kane, that's one thing. But do you want to go bigger on actors as well? Because they have just as much, a lot of them have just as much torture. They have as much good days and bad days. They probably want to go back to their mentors. Do you think there's any mileage you can get from them?
Absolutely. I mean, Patsy was fantastic. She re it's really a great episode, but we'd love to have a few more TV actors and film actors and stuff like that. We only had DJ Spoonie from music, so we really want to go into that. The only time that I don't think it worked very well is for sports people at the peak of their game, because we asked the people to be so open. I think if you were, I think it'd be very difficult to show your frailties if you're 27, 28 years old. And also, you haven't necessarily got the life experiences.
And you haven't finished.
You haven't finished. The story is still ongoing. So, anyone sort of who's not in sports, we could probably go younger. But for sports people, they really need to have retired and taken stock of, the amazing journey they've been on.
Because the other set of people I actually would find interesting, and I know we were talking about sort of, hey, what about this? Hey, what about that? Is again, it's people who have kind of, I suppose, finish their career, or at least finish the public part of their career. And I find them more interesting than when, as you say, they're at the peak of their game, is politicians, and I mean government politicians, those that have served in the cabinet, those that have served on the front benches. I find them endlessly more fascinating once they've been, elevated to the House of Lords, because I find their honesty that much more refreshing than when they're in government. I mean, is there, and I say this as someone, and I've got no qualms about saying this, as someone of the left, I'm fascinated to hear people from all across the political spectrum tell their story, including, those who have had a tough upbringing. Is there, I mean, I suppose that probably what I'm saying here is that there is no limit as to the scope of who it was you would interview.
Matt, what do you think about ex-politicians? You like that?
I'd be absolutely fascinated for exactly the same reasons that you've just outlined, Al. I think that it would be, again, to hear the motivation behind their careers, what prompted them with their decision making, which party they joined, how they voted. Might be scary at times, but I think it's something that would be really quite powerful listening.
I mean, the people that spring to mind are those still alive who served under either sort of Thatcher or Major. I mean, I'm thinking of the likes of John Major and Michael Heseltine, and I think Douglas Hurd's still going up. These are people that, even though I'd fundamentally disagree with them, probably, I think I'd find their stories fascinating. And likewise, even I suppose the football equivalent is listening to an ex-Palace player. But you know, that's churlish to say, well, I wouldn't listen to them just because dot dot dot. So have you looked at sort of in increasing the scope, and if so, where else would you think you could take it?
I think that's a brilliant idea. By the way, I'd sort of written off current politicians, but I hadn't thought about ex politicians, and so that's a superb suggestion. It can go in any direction, can't it? It could be composers or scientists or explorers or whatever. And the other obvious area is unsung heroes, those people that do incredible work, but actually don't get the chance to sort of celebrate what they've done. You know, I don't know, medical people or firefighters or whatever it is. So, and
Or even
obviously,
something like, say, a retired surgeon or something like that.
absolutely. I think most people, if you dig deep enough and you talk to them and they feel comfortable, have normally got a good story to tell. So I think that the scope is endless. I don't think we're ever going to run out of great guests.
Right, so I'm very prepared to get some radio silence, but I'm going to ask you something that you ask your guests. If you had that golden envelope, who would you write it to, and do you know what you'd say?
Matt,
And
you go
by that
first.
I mean, you know, writing a letter to the person that means most to you in your career, to the person who first believed in you, the first person who mentored you in whatever capacity that you feel see fit to talk about. Have you actually, bearing in mind you've foisted this on other people, have you actually thought about doing this on yourself?
Matt, do you want to go first, and then I'll go?
Yeah, let Steve cry first.
Yeah, that's thanks for dropping me into that first. It's really interesting actually, because when you asked that question, I thought, oh, you know, lots of people talk about their other half or their parents, but actually when you ask it in that way, the first person who comes to mind is my wife, Kate. You know, she believes in me. She, you know, she's my best friend. I certainly wouldn't be where I am today in life with, you know, an amazing family without her. So it would be churlish to say Gary Lineker or someone like that in comparison, as much as he was a childhood hero. So I, yeah, without spending some time thinking about a really intelligent, really clever answer, I'd have to go with my wife, Kate.
Fair enough. Steve, has this thing ever sort of crossed your mind with, if you're going to ask it of other people, then, you know, get with your solicitor hat on that people are going to ask it of you.
It's a very easy one for me. It's my grandfather, Yolo, and he was and he is. He died in 2011, but massive impact on me. Proper Renaissance man, sportsman, scientist, was in the tanks in the Second World War, blah blah blah, and just never put a foot wrong. And just hilarious company. So
So what was it
Yolo.
about him that I mean, like, he's your hero, clearly, but what was it about him that set you on the path to where you are and who you are?
Every day, I pretty much think about him, and if I've ever got an issue, I just think, well, what do Yolo do? And then it's very easy to go from there. So his shadow is huge. You know, he was a poet as well. You know, published in 60 books, and he just lived life to the max. And even in his 80s, he loved being around, you know, younger, dynamic people. He had the brain of a 22-year-old at 82.
Hang on, a brain of a 22-year-old, the ones that moaned about the 7-0 defeat.
No, he
I
didn't.
know what you
He
mean.
didn't moan a lot. No,
Is he
he
the
didn't
fellow that
moan.
took you to rugby?
He took me to rugby with my dad, passionate Welshman, very politically active. Everything he wore was red for obvious reasons. His car was red. Just brilliant company. You know, where you at our wedding, he did a speech, and it
I
was
remember.
amazing. You know, you can remember. You were there. You
I
saw
was
it.
there.
Fantastic. So, yeah.
Can I just say that I've got to take this back to an Albion reference. The day that Steve and his lovely wife Helen got married was the day, and everyone who was there will remember this because it's one of those tear your hair out games. And if I said that Walsall game. No, not the 7-0 in 1976. I'm talking about that game where Walsall went down to nine men and we put cross after cross after cross in. And everyone, what's that say about sort of trying to understand the meaning of madness, trying the same thing and expecting a different result? Yeah, it was that game. It's one of those games that a lot of people who went with Dean, I only missed about half a dozen games. And in that sense, I'm really glad I did, because one, I had a great day at Stephen Allen's wedding, which was fantastic. And two, I missed probably one of the most irritating games that people still talk about to this day. And the number of people have said to me, "You lucky, lucky chap." So, Steve, Matt, one of you, just give us a quick confirmation. Remind us, who it is that we can hear interviews of and where we can hear about Heroes Have Heroes.
Yeah, so Heroes Are Heroes, you can watch the full interviews on YouTube, and then on Insta and Facebook, you can watch all the clips. And so we've got Paul Merson, Rachel Yankee, Tuffers, Baroness Tanny Gray-Thompson, Maggie Alfonso, Patsy Palmer, Russell Kane, DJ Spoonie.
And there's absolutely no hint as to who's going to be in Series 2 yet.
Not yet.
Okay. So Matt, we've got to close up now. So, next season, just a quick one from you. Where's your mojo right now?
Expecting more consistency for the Albion. I would like to think we can improve on that eighth placed finish, even if it's only by a spot. But I think we've got to be pushing for that with the amount that we spent last summer. The quality of players we have in the squad who are a year older, more development under them, and the quality of players that we're bringing back from loan as well. I keep hearing about, I can't remember his name, but the guy we've got on loan out at Sturm Graz, who there are rumours he's as good as, if not better than, Belieber. I'd like to see them around the first team squad as well. So we've got to be pushing to finish seventh, I'd say, mostly because I really want a European away day. Really, really want a European away day.
Yeah, and not somewhere in Eastern, Southern Asia as well. Steve, what are you looking forward to next season?
More of the same. I think we can go higher than that. I think the inconsistencies with some of the lower league teams hopefully will start to become a thing of the past. And you just look at the players that we've got, you look at the setup and the infrastructure and everything else. So I'm super ambitious. I think that we should get a really decent European spot. So I'm incredibly positive about this coming season. I really am.
Meanwhile, you have been listening to the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB+, on podcasts, on everywhere. Just about, we are omnipresent. Sorry about that. My thanks indeed to Stephen Rees-Lewis. My thanks to Matt Goulson. We'll be back next week with, would you believe, another director. In the meantime, do make sure you tune into absolutely everything on Radio Reverb, because we're brilliant. And we'll see you again soon. Cheers for listening. Bye.